Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to South America. South America is the fourth largest continent on Earth. Before Europeans discovered it, South America was the home of many ancient civilizations, numbering millions of people. South America is home to the Amazon, the second longest river on Earth, Lake Titicaca, one of the highest lakes on Earth, the Atacama Desert, the driest place on Earth, and Mount Aconcagua, second highest mountain on Earth. For further information about South America, I suggest KidsWorldTravelGuide.com. We start today with a story from Brazil. Here is How the Speckled Hen Got Her Speckles. Once upon a time, ages and ages ago, there was a little white hen. One day she was busily engaged in scratching the soil to find worms and insects for her breakfast. As she worked, she sang over and over again her little crooning song, "Quirichi, quirichi, quirichi." Suddenly, she noticed a tiny piece of paper lying on the ground. "What luck," she said to herself. "This must be a letter." One time when the king, the great ruler of our country, held his court in the meadow close by, many people brought him letters and laid them at his feet. "Now I, too, even I, the little white hen, have a letter. I am going to carry my letter to the king." The next morning, the little white hen started bravely out on her long journey. She carried the letter very carefully in her little brown basket. It was a long distance to the royal palace where the king lived. The little white hen had never been so far from home in all her life. After a while, she met a friendly fox. "Foxes and little white hens are not usually very good friends, you know, but this fox was a friend of the little white hen. Once upon a time, she had helped the fox to escape from a trap, and the fox had never forgotten her kindness to him. "Oh, little white hen, where are you going?" asked the fox. "I am going to the royal palace to carry a letter to the king," she replied. "Indeed, little white hen," said the fox, "I should like to go with you." "I shall be glad to have you go with me," said the little white hen. "It is a very long journey to the royal palace where the king lives. Wouldn't you like me to carry you in my little brown basket?" The fox climbed into the little brown basket. After the little white hen had gone on for some distance farther, she met a river. Once upon a time, the little white hen had done the river a kindness. He had, with great difficulty, thrown some ugly worms upon the bank, and he was afraid they would crawl back in again. The little white hen had eaten them for him. Always after that, the river had been her friend. "Oh, little white hen, where are you going?" the river called out as soon as he saw her. "I am going to the royal palace to carry a letter to the king," replied the little white hen. "Oh, little white hen, may I go with you?" asked the river. The little white hen told the river that he might go with her and asked him to ride in the little brown basket. So the river climbed into the little brown basket. After the little white hen had journeyed along for a time, she came to a fire. Once upon a time, when the fire had been dying, the little white hen had brought some dried grass. The grass had given the fire new life, and always after that, he had been the friend of the little white hen. "Oh, little white hen, where are you going?" the fire asked. "I am going to the royal palace to carry a letter to the king," replied the little white hen. "Oh, little white hen, may I go with you?" asked the fire. "I have never been to the royal palace, and I have never had even a peep at the king." The little white hen told the fire that he might go with her and asked him to climb into the little brown basket. By this time, the little brown basket was so full that, try as they might, they couldn't make room for the fire. At last, they thought of a plan. The fire changed himself into ashes, and then there was room for him to get into the basket. The little white hen journeyed on, and finally she arrived at the royal palace. "Who are you, and what are you carrying in your little brown basket?" asked the royal doorkeeper when he opened the door. Hi, I'm the little white hen, and I'm carrying a letter to the king, replied the little white hen. She didn't say a word about the fox and the river and the fire, which she had in her little brown basket. She was so frightened before the great royal doorkeeper of the palace that she could hardly find her voice at all. The royal doorkeeper invited the little white hen to enter the palace, and he led her to the royal throne where the king was sitting. The little white hen bowed very low before the king, so low, in fact, that it mussed up all her feathers.
"Who are you, and what is your business?" asked the king in his big, deep, kingly voice.
"I am the little white hen," she replied in a low, frightened little voice. I have come to bring my letter to your royal majesty."
She handed the king the piece of paper which had remained all this time at the bottom of the little brown basket. There were marks of dirt upon it where the friendly fox's feet had rested. It was damp where the river had lain. It had tiny holes in it where the fire had sat after he had turned himself into hot ashes.
"What do you mean by bringing me this dirty piece of paper?" shouted the king in his biggest, deepest, gruffest voice. "I am highly offended. I always knew that hens were stupid little creatures, but you are quite the stupidest little hen I ever saw in all my life. Here," and he turned to one of the attendants standing by the throne, "take this stupid little white hen and throw her out into the royal poultry yard. I think we will have her for dinner tomorrow."
The little white hen was roughly seized by the tallest royal attendant and carried down the back stairs, through the back gate, and out into the royal poultry yard. She still clung to the little brown basket which she had brought with her on her long journey to the royal palace. When the little white hen reached the royal poultry yard, all the royal fowls flew at her. Some plucked at her rumpled white feathers. One pulled off the cover of the little brown basket. Out sprang the fox, and in the twinkling of an eye, he fell upon the fowls of the royal poultry yard. Not a single fowl was left alive. There was such a great commotion that the king, the queen, the royal attendants, and all the royal servants of the palace came rushing out to see what was the matter. Fox had already taken to his heels, and the little white hen lost no time in running away, too. She did not, however, forget to take her little brown basket with her. The royal household all ran after her in swift pursuit. They had almost caught her when the river suddenly sprang out of the little brown basket and flowed between the little white hen and her royal pursuers. They couldn't get across without canoes. While they were getting their canoes and climbing into them, the little white hen had time to run a long way. She had almost reached a thick forest where she could easily hide herself when the royal pursuers again drew near. Then the fire, which had changed itself into hot ashes, jumped out of the little brown basket. It immediately became dark, so dark that the royal household could not even see each other's faces, and of course they could not see in which direction the little white hen was running. There was nothing for them to do but return to the royal palace. But the ashes also had scattered themselves all over the little white hen. From that day, she was always speckled where the ashes fell upon her. The chickens of the little white hen, who was now a little speckled hen, were all speckled too. So were their chickens, and their chickens, and their chickens' chickens, even down to this very day. Whenever you see a speckled hen, you may know that she is descended from the little white hen who carried a letter to the king, and who in return for doing so became the first speckled hen. Our next story comes from Ecuador and is a legend from the Incas who used to live there. It is called The Search for the Magic Lake. There once lived a girl named Ampata and her parents and two old brothers. Her family was poor and farmed the land as best they could to serve their emperor, the Sun King. One day, they learned that the health of the prince, who had been not well since birth, had worsened. The Sun King feared for the very life of his only son.
"Our only hope, sire," said the court magician, "is for your son to drink the water from the magic lake at the end of the earth. That is where the sky dips so low that it touches the lake's water and changes it with a magical healing power." The Sun King announced that whoever could bring him water from the magic lake at the end of the earth would be richly rewarded. Ampata's two older brothers begged their parents to allow them to go. "We know we can find the magic lake," they insisted. "The end of the earth is too far," said their father, crossing his arms. Their mother agreed, adding, "Panthers, boa constrictors, falls from rocky ledges. Who knows the dangers that could befall you?"
"But our prince will die without the water from the magic lake," they cried. "We must try."
Eventually, the parents relented, and Ampata's brothers embarked on the journey. They traveled for months, trekking through endless mountain ranges each time, thinking the mountain they were climbing on must be the very last one on earth, and beyond it they could reach the magic lake. But this did not happen. One day, after climbing yet another mountain they had hoped was the last one on earth, only to discover at its summit dozens of more peaks in the distance, one of the brothers said, discouraged, "We're not going to find the magic lake." "I know," said the other, panting with exhaustion. "This is hopeless. What should we do?"
"Look, the harvest is coming and our parents need us back at the farm. Let's take some water from this mountain lake back to the prince. Who knows? We're so far from Cuzco. Maybe the water will help cure him."
They had their doubts, but scooped the jar full of the mountain lake water, sealed it, and presented it to the Sun King at the castle. But when the court magician poured their water into his flask, it sizzled and evaporated in a flash. The court magician frowned.
"My magic flask holds only water from the magic lake," said he. "This water is fake. The men are impostors." "How dare you try to trick the royal family?" bellowed the Sun King. "Throw them in prison."
News of the young men's fate spread throughout the land. Though her brothers languished in jail, Ampata held out hope, since at least they were still alive.
"Absolutely not," said Ampata's parents when she pleaded with them to allow her to go in search of the magic lake too. "We'll have no children left at home," they cried.
But Ampata implored them, saying it was the only way to win her brothers' release from prison. Besides, the Sun King's poor son was worse than ever and had slipped into a coma. His situation was desperate. At last, her mother gave her a bag of toasted corn and nuts and a llama to keep her company. Sighing, her parents bid their youngest child farewell. On Ampata's first night, she snuggled into the warmth of her llama, but on the second night, her sleep was shattered by the cry of a panther. She couldn't endanger her llama, and so she pointed the way home for her pet and urged her to go, and quickly. That night, Ampata climbed the trees to spend the night safely out of harm's way. The crook of a tree trunk is hardly a comfortable bed, but sleeping in the trees can bring unexpected benefits. The next morning, Ampata watched bemused as a pair of scarlet macaws circling overhead, those noisy, gorgeous, deep red parrots with white patches on their faces and splotches of blue and yellow on their wings. While she watched, she chewed some toasted corn and nuts, and when the macaws alighted on the next branch, she spread some treats for them too.
"Quack, quack!"
The macaws helped themselves to the treats.
"What is a human girl doing in the trees?" said the other bird. "Quack!"
Ampata told them her story of the prince's mysterious sickness, her brother's failed attempt to save him, and her determination to find the magic lake.
"You will never get there on your own," said one of the macaws. "Quack!"
The two birds bobbed their beaks and flew to the edge of the limb. After a few moments, one of them turned to her and said,
"We enjoyed your tasty treats, and we know how to help you."
The macaws rubbed their backs against one another in a kind of dance. After three feathers fell, they picked them up and flew to Ampata. Said one macaw, setting the feathers in her lap,
"These three feathers have magic. Hold them together as a fan. They will take you wherever you want to go, and they will protect you from danger."
She spread the three feathers and tied the bottom of the fan with a ribbon of wool from her hair. "I can never thank you enough," she said to the two macaws. Holding the fan before her, she said, "If you please, will you take me to the magic lake at the end of the earth?"
as if she were a feather herself, Ampara was lifted far above the trees and whisked to the mountains. Thousands of feet below her, the snow-topped peaks of the Andes Mountains raced by, and Ampara nervously clutched her fan. At last, she was lowered ever so gently onto the very last peak, and her feet alighted. There before her sparkled the magic lake. Indeed, where the sky touched the water in the magic lake fizzed and sparkled. Ampara knew she had reached the end of the earth. She tucked the fan into her braided waistband. Ampara dipped the jar into the magic waters. As soon as the jar was filled and sealed shut, she gripped the fan and said, "Right away, please, take me to the castle of the Sun King." When she announced she had brought water from the magic lake, the girl was ushered upstairs to the sick prince's room. Ampara gave her jar to the court magician. When he poured the water from her jar into his magic flask, and it did not sizzle or disappear, he smiled and glanced at her with excitement. He let a few droplets fall onto the lips of the pale-faced young prince. The prince's eyes opened. Everyone in the royal bedroom cheered, and the prince smiled. The Sun King was overjoyed. "You did it," he exclaimed to Ampara. "You brought back water from the magic lake. You may live here and join the royal family," he said.
"If you please, sir," said Ampara, "may I ask three favors instead?"
"Of course, whatever you want."
"First, would you release my two brothers from prison? I'm sure they are sorry for their mistake and would like nothing better than a second chance to serve you again."
"Consider it done," said the Sun King. "What else?"
"I'd like to return these three magic feathers to my friends, the Scarlet Macaws." Instantly, the fan pried itself free of her waistband, shot upward in the air, and quickly spun around and flew out an empty window.
"Looks like that's taken care of, too," smiled the Sun King. "What is your third wish?"
"Would you grant my parents large flocks of llama and alpacas and enough land to herd them so they will not be poor in their old age and so my brothers and I can take care of them?"
"My dear girl, I'll gladly grant you this on one condition, that you promise to visit us often at the castle as our treasured friend."
As it turns out, years later, Ampara joined the royal family after all. From many visits with the prince, a close friendship deepened to love, and none were prouder and happier at their royal wedding than Ampara's parents and two older brothers.
You are listening to Gima's Tales for Children on KCIW LP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.
Rabbits like to live in South America just as they do here in North America, and they like to eat the same things our rabbits do. Our next story is called How the Rabbit Lost His Tail. Once upon a time, ages and ages ago, the rabbit had a long tail, but the cat had none. She looked with envious eyes at the one which the rabbit had. It was exactly the sort of a tail she longed to have. The rabbit was always a thoughtless, careless little beast. One day he went to sleep with his beautiful long tail hanging straight out behind him. Along came Mistress Puss, carrying a sharp knife, and with one blow she cut off Mr. Rabbit's tail. Mistress Puss was very spry, and she had the tail neatly sewed onto her own body before Mr. Rabbit saw what she was doing.
"Don't you think it looks better on me than it did on you?" asked Mistress Puss.
"It surely is very becoming to you," replied the generous, unselfish rabbit. "It was a little too long for me anyway, and I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll let you keep it if you will give me that sharp knife in exchange for it."
The cat gave Mr. Rabbit the knife, and he started out into the deep forest with it. "I've lost my tail, but I've gained a knife," said he. "I'll get a new tail or something else just as good." Mr. Rabbit hopped along through the forest for a long time, and at last he came to a little old man who was busily engaged in making baskets. He was making the baskets out of rushes, and he was biting them off with his teeth. He looked up and spied Mr. Rabbit with the knife in his mouth.
"Oh, please, Mr. Rabbit," said he, "will you not be so kind as to let me borrow that sharp knife you are carrying? It is very hard to bite the brushes off with my teeth."
Mr. Rabbit let him take the knife. He started to cut off the rushes with it.
when, snap, went the knife. It broke into half.
"Oh, dear, oh, dear," cried Mr. Rabbit. "What shall I do? What shall I do? You've broken my nice new knife."
The little old man said that he was very sorry and that he did not mean to do it. Then Mr. Rabbit said, "Broken knife is of no use to me, but perhaps you can use it even if it's broken. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll let you keep the knife if you will give me one of your baskets in exchange for it."
The little old man gave Mr. Rabbit a basket, and he started on through the deep forest with it.
"I lost my tail, but I gained a knife. I've lost my knife, but I've gained a basket," said he. "I'll get a new tail or something else just as good."
Mr. Rabbit hopped along through the deep forest for a long time until at last he came to a clearing. Here there was an old woman, busily engaged in picking lettuce. When she had gathered it, she put it into her apron. She looked up and spied Mr. Rabbit hopping along with his basket.
"Oh, please, Mr. Rabbit," said she, "will you not be so kind as to let me borrow that nice basket you are carrying?"
Mr. Rabbit let her take the basket. She began to put her lettuce into it, when out fell the bottom of the basket.
Oh, dear," cried Mr. Rabbit. "What shall I do? What shall I do? You have broken the bottom out of my nice new basket."
The little old woman said she was very sorry and that she did not mean to do it. Then said Mr. Rabbit, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll let you keep that broken basket if you will give me some of your lettuce." The old woman gave Mr. Rabbit some lettuce, and he hopped along with it, saying, "I lost my tail, but I gained a knife. I lost my knife, but I gained a basket. I lost a basket, but I gained some lettuce." This rabbit was getting very hungry, and how nice the lettuce smelled. He took a bite. It was just the very best thing he had ever tasted in all his life.
"I don't care if I did lose my tail," said he. "I've found something I like very much better."
From that day to this, no rabbit has ever had a tail. Neither has there ever been a rabbit who cared because he had no tail. From that time to this, there has never been a rabbit who did not like lettuce to eat and who was not perfectly happy and contented if there was plenty of it. Our final story today is about monkeys. There are so many different types of monkeys that live in South America that scientists haven't yet discovered all of them. Here is the story of Why the Bananas Belong to the Monkey. Once upon a time, when the world had just been made, and there was only one kind of banana, but very many kinds of monkeys, there was a little old woman who had a big garden full of banana trees. It was very difficult for the old woman to gather the bananas herself, so she made a bargain with the largest monkey. She told him that if he would gather the bunches of bananas for her, she would give him half of them. The monkey gathered the bananas. When he took his half, he gave the little old woman the bananas which grew at the bottom of the bunch, that are small and wrinkled. The nice big fat ones he kept for himself and carried them home to let them ripen in the dark. The little old woman was very angry. She lay awake all night trying to think of some way by which she could get even with the monkey. At last she thought of a trick. The next morning she made an image of wax, which looked just like a little boy. Then she placed a large flat basket on the top of the image's head, and in the basket she placed the best ripe bananas she could find. They certainly looked very tempting. After a little while, the biggest monkey passed that way. He saw the image of wax and thought that it was a boy peddling bananas. He had often pushed over boy banana peddlers, upset their baskets, and then had run away with the bananas. This morning he was feeling very good-natured, so he thought he would first try asking politely for the bananas. "Oh, peddler boy," he said to him, "please give me a banana." The image of wax answered never a word. Again the monkey said, this time in a little louder voice, "Oh, peddler boy, please give me a banana, just one little ripe, little sweet little banana." The image of wax answered never a word. Then the monkey called out in his loudest voice, "Oh, peddler boy, if you don't give me a banana, I'll give you such a push that it will upset all of your bananas." The image of wax was silent. The monkey ran toward the image of wax and struck it hard with his hand. His hand remained firmly embedded in the wax. "Oh, peddler boy, let go my hand,"
the monkey called out. Let go my hand and give me a banana, or else I'll give you a hard, hard blow with my other hand.
The image of wax did not let go.
The monkey gave the image a hard, hard blow with his other hand. The other hand remained firmly embedded in the wax.
Then the monkey called out, Oh, peddler boy, let go my two hands. Let go my two hands and give me a banana, or else I will give you a kick with my foot.
The image of wax did not let go.
The monkey gave the image a kick with his foot, and his foot remained stuck fast in the wax.
Oh, peddler boy, the monkey cried, let go my foot. Let go of my two hands and my foot and give me a banana, or else I'll give you a kick with my other foot.
The image of wax did not let go.
Then the monkey, who was now very angry, gave the image of wax a kick with his foot, and his foot remained stuck fast in the wax.
The monkey shouted, Oh, peddler boy, let go my foot. Let go of my two feet and my two hands and give me a banana, or else I'll give you a push with my body.
The image of wax did not let go.
The monkey gave the image of wax a push with his body. His body remained caught fast in the wax.
Oh, peddler boy, the monkey shouted. Let go my body and my two feet and my two hands, or I'll call all the other monkeys to help me.
The image of wax did not let go.
Then the monkey made such an uproar with his cries and shouts that very soon monkeys came running from all directions. There were big monkeys and little monkeys and middle-sized monkeys. A whole army of monkeys had come to the aid of the biggest monkey. It was the very littlest monkey who thought of a plan to help the biggest monkey out of his plight. The monkeys were to climb up into the biggest tree and pile themselves one on top of another until they made a pyramid of monkeys. The monkey with the very loudest voice of all was to be on top, and he was to shout his very loudest to the sun and ask the sun to come and help the biggest monkey out of his dreadful difficulty. This is what all the big-sized, little-sized, middle-sized monkeys did. The monkey with the loudest voice on top of the pyramid made the sun hear. The sun came at once. The sun poured his hottest rays down upon the wax. After a while, the wax began to melt. The monkey was at last able to pull out one of his hands. The sun poured down more of his hottest rays, and soon the monkey was able to pull out his two hands. Then he could pull out one foot, then another, and in a little while, his body too. At last he was free. When the little old woman saw what had happened, she was very much discouraged about raising bananas. She decided to move to another part of the world where she raised cabbages instead of bananas. The monkeys were left in possession of the big garden full of banana trees. From that day to this, the monkeys have thought that they own all the bananas. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to the land of Aladdin, flying carpets and magic lamps, the Middle East. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIWLP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.